I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's Thursday after a busy, busy midweek. It's a sunshiny day outside. So, Jules, let's get right into it because we have a lot of stuff to go through.
Yeah.
We have Real Madrid losing to Little Alcoyano. We have three different league changes in the Premier League.
Yes.
But let's start with one of the teams that was top of the league in the Premier League for 24 hours, Leicester City. And to help us break them down, Let's welcome in Mark Ogden. Augie, they beat Chelsea on Tuesday night, 2-0. Could have been more. I don't want to get into the whole sort of plucky underdog thing, and you know it's a bit trite. But what's really impressing about Leicester this season, for me at least, are two things. One is they have a tremendous record against the so-called Big Six, the six wealthiest clubs, and two, this is a multidimensional team. If in the past Leicester was, you know, oh, let's find Vardy on the counter and set pieces and whatever, they show that they're very good on the counter and in transition, but they're also very comfortable on the ball.
Yeah, I mean, they are a very good team, and they do get underestimated at times because they're Leicester, and people still think that what happened in 2016 was just the biggest fluke of all time. You know, it's been a sustained period of development at Leicester now over the last 5 or 6 years, and they're a very good team. You look throughout the team, they've got a very solid defence, they've got a reliable goalkeeper. You know, Wilfred Ndidi is one of the most underrated players in the Premier League. Up front, Jamie Vardy's still scoring goals. Harvey Barnes has got, you know, great creativity down the left. So they're a good team in all areas. And, you know, whenever they play one of the biggest sides, as you've said, I mean, they went to City and won 5-2 and had Pep Guardiola complaining about how they sat back and just defended. Well, they didn't sit back and defend. They played the way that Leicester play, and they beat City because of that. So they go to these teams and they face the big teams without any kind of inferiority complex. I think they actually relish being the team that, you know, are the underdogs and people discount them. But Leicester are a very good team. I'm not saying they'll win the league, but they are a very good team, and I think they'll go closer this year to finishing top four.
They're better collectively than
he said. Close to finishing top four this year. This is his prediction. Close to finishing top four. Are you that negative on them?
Closer.
That's not being
closer
negative.
They're going to finish closer to finish top four. Wait.
That's not being negative. There's a huge, you know, there's seven teams that can finish top four. So I think it'll be a battle. I think they will finish fourth. I don't think they will win the league, but they're certainly a better team collectively than they were in 2016. They've got 1 point more, I think, than the season they won the league. And as we've been saying for weeks now, this is a league that was going to be won with 80 points. So any of that current top seven can go and win it, basically.
Yeah, but
they have a lot of assets. However, playing in the Europa League when the Europa League comes back next month, I think, especially in those later stages, would be a big challenge, I think, for them.
Augie, one of the big things is recruitment. We've made the comparison, obviously, with 2016 when they won the league. This is a better team, you know, top to bottom.
Yeah.
I think that team probably had three outstanding individuals who had better seasons than any individual for Leicester City this year. But you can't help but underscore how good their recruitment has been. I mean, Tielemans and Ndidi are one of the best duos in midfield.
Yeah.
You know, we said last year, aren't Ricardo Pereira, or 2 years ago, Ricardo Pereira and Chilwell, you know, that could be the best fullback partnership. Well, now they have a different one in James Justin and Timothy Castagne. They're not far off that in many ways. And, of course, Ricardo Pereira back from injury. So Yunju, who was so good last year, he's back from injury, but, you know, can he break in ahead of Johnny Evans and Fofana, who arguably the newcomer of the season in the Premier League? You spent some time on this. What makes the recruitment better than so many other clubs?
I mean, let's go back to 2015-16. One of the big parts of the success then was, you know, the Mike Walsh factor. He was the director of football that brought in the players, people like Kante and Mahrez, that, you know, people weren't really aware of at the time, apart from, you know, the guys who know France. So
Steve Walsh.
That is Leicester's philosophy.
Steve Walsh, yeah.
Steve Walsh. Mike Walsh. Who's Mike Walsh? Steve Walsh brought these players in. And I think that, you know, now they had a couple of bad years where they had some bad recruitment when Walsh left, and they tried to patch it up. But then Brendan Rodgers, since he came in, he brought with him Lee Congerton, the guy from Celtic, who was his sporting director at Celtic. And, you know, Rodgers and Congerton work very well together. And, you know, Rodgers just leaves Congerton to bring players in. So what they've done is they've got great connections in France particularly, and they brought in Fofana, they brought in Castagne from Atalanta, they brought in James Justin for just £8 million from Luton. They look at players, that they see potential, they see the talent they have, and they build it.
Now, it doesn't always work, right? Because Slimani hasn't worked out, Ayuse Perez hasn't worked out, so it's not always as simple as everybody
club. And I'll say this about recruitment, though. As we saw when Walsh went to Everton, didn't quite work out.
Yeah, of course.
Congerton, before going to Celtic, he was at Sunderland, where they didn't exactly pull up trees at all with their recruitment. No. Obviously, many different reasons. I guess the only reason I say this is because I think a lot of times when we can judge a club's recruitment as a whole, in terms of who is responsible, it's difficult to judge. You know, maybe Congerton was great at Sunderland, but there were people around him who made different decisions. Maybe
the environment.
It's difficult to tell.
The thing that Leicester, I think, what you have to add to Leicester is it all works. So you've got a manager who trusts his sporting director and vice versa, and they've got an owner on a regime that are very, very backing of their manager and what they want. That they won't spend huge sums of money, but they will always back their guys in that kind of mid-range of players, because they know that there's a blueprint to bring it on. So, you know, I spoke to Paul Scholes last week, I said to him, if Man United could sign one player to take them the next level this window, who would it be? And I was expecting him to say Erling Haaland, and he said Fofana. He said Fofana at 20 has been outstanding. He said he could be anything you want.
But then I'm sorry. This is not
going to know that.
But that's not, you know, Paul Scholes didn't know anything about Wesley Fofana 3 months ago.
I know, but now he's seen him, and now he's formed an opinion. Point. This is how Paul Scholes and many
Rogers. I spoke to Rogers as they were about to sign him, and he could not believe that there was no other English clubs on him. So other clubs should do their homework and look at other leagues, not just their own.
There were other clubs. I know of one that I think we're going to report tomorrow in the notebook, so I don't want to kind of give the game away. But Leicester knew there was competition. And
no one else made an offer, so I mean, maybe they watched it on TV.
Let's do a quick off the mark. I think that it's their connections in France that help them get quick off the mark with Fofana.
Oggy, they had to make 3 different offers. It was not off the mark. It took them forever to sign him. Anyone else could have come in and said to Saint-Etienne, okay, we give you 40, 45, and they would have done the deal.
Okay, but here's the thing.
What were Arsenal doing, by the way? When they looked at Saliba, were they not looking at Fofana as well?
Saliba was playing before Fofana, so he was. Ooh. And when he had his injury, then they brought Fofana more to the front, and then he improved so incredibly quickly.
This is the thing. I mean, without wishing to put the other 19 Premier League clubs on trial for not getting Fofana. Let's also remind ourselves that there was a global pandemic. Very few clubs were spending money. And to go and he cost in the end, what was it, 30 million?
Yeah.
Right? To go and spend 30 million on a guy who had 18 months of top flight?
No, not even that.
Not even that?
30 games.
A guy who has 30 games of top flight experience in Ligue 1. I mean, that is a huge. I say this in a positive way, right? The point Mark made before about the confidence that the ownership has in Rodgers and Congerton and whatever is pretty significant. Because I can tell you, you have to be darn sure to trust to make such a massive investment in a pandemic. Let's not forget, I don't want to go back to this, right?
Nobody spent
money, and you go and you buy this guy. Yeah, he's super promising, and he had a good season in Ligue 1. That's fine. There's a long list of talented young French players who look great after 1 year in Ligue 1 and then stink and aren't good enough to play. You spend 30 million is an enormous price.
You're right. And I understand
you have to
that.
Be sure of this.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, a big credit.
I know, but that's also part of all the work that you do before signing someone, how quickly you think he will adapt. You know, you check a lot of things, not just how he plays. And for a club like United, I understand why they thought, okay, he might not be ready for it. This is a much, much bigger step up from Saint-Etienne to United than from Saint-Etienne to Leicester. No offense to Leicester and their fans again. So maybe if you're United, you think, okay, let's see how he does at Leicester, and then even if he cost us twice the price or 3 times the price, then we move for him. But I think that he was a no-brainer for a lot of clubs.
I think that's a good distinction to make. And I mean, more broadly, when you have a guy in that situation, Mark, where, you know, a big six club who has the money to buy Fofana, even though, again, I go back to this, 30 million for center back with that level of experience is still an enormous amount.
Yeah, no, it is.
They might feel, well, if we sign him, he's not going to play in the first team. We have to bring him along slowly. We have to loan him out. Let's go for something that can, somebody that we're pretty more confident they can contribute right away. That kind of clears the way for that sort of second tier, sort of 7 to 10 clubs in the Premier League who can put together 30 million and who say, hey, look, you'll come here, maybe you'll spend a year backing up Soyuncu and Evans, but you'll learn, you'll grow, and if you're good enough, you will play very, very quickly. And obviously, he's played even sooner than that. That's almost like a sweet spot, I think, that Leicester are in, right?
Yeah, I think Wolves have benefited from that as well with their purchases, you know, the last couple of years. I do think as well, if teams like United or City or Liverpool were looking at Fofana, then there would have been the big club tax as well. They would have had to pay maybe £50 million for him. And I think at that point it becomes a lot to pay for a player that's got less than 18 months' experience. But, you know, Leicester, as you've seen in recent years, they're very good at finding players, paying decent money, but then in a year or two's time, selling them for more. Harry Maguire, they got big money for. Kante, they got big money for. Mahrez, you know, Ben Chilwell came through the ranks, great money for. I think Maddison might be one of the next ones, James Maddison. And again, they will probably want Jack Grealish money for James Maddison. So whenever Leicester sign a player, they know that in 2 or 3 years' time, the plan will be to sell him on. But they're very good at doing that. And then, you know, Leicester know there's a way of getting players moved on and replace them with cheaper players that can, in time, become as valuable.
Their planning is great. And then the next one will be Vardy, because already this season, he's been good and he scored goals, a lot of them on penalties. And there will be a point where he won't be able to do what he's been doing for the last 5-6 years. And
so
I'm really curious
to
see
a striker.
Yeah, and maybe at some point they thought, okay, Iheanacho, I don't know, could be a good option, could be this, could be that. Clearly not. And neither is Perez or Slimani or whoever else you want. And this would be very interesting to see how you move on from the Vardy era. Who you go to get him? Do you get someone very similar profile? Do you get someone different? Do you actually move on to a front two? And maybe you've got more options like this, and you still play Maddison as a 10 behind. I don't know, you know, but that's interesting. Same with the goalkeeper.
Yeah, no, I think, well, with Vardy specifically, I think that creates, that's going to create really interesting dynamic down the road, because this is a guy who's been loyal to the club, who turned down opportunities to go elsewhere to make more money. And at some point, you know, you're going to have to drop him, because like everybody else, he's going to get older, right? He's not Dorian Gray's portrait. So eventually, how do you do that? How do you handle the internal politics with that? Obviously, he's close to the ownership, but I mean, this is a dynamic that's going to play out down the road. And
they've been very good with their like senior, you know, veterans player like Wes Morgan and stuff.
Yeah,
without
the difference is Wes Morgan didn't turn down a move to Arsenal. I think that's
I know. I think he's been rewarded, Vardy, since doing that,
of course, with
big contracts and pay rises and everything. So, but it's more. I've got not worries on how they sort of like will weigh him down. It's more like who's going to come next. And just imagine whoever that is will have to be pretty good to just take over Jamie Vardy and try to have the same efficiency.
I knew nothing about James Justin before he arrived at Leicester, because I don't follow the lower leagues and I certainly don't follow Luton. I mean, to me, it's just kind of an airport outside London. Do we have any rational explanation about why he was available for $8 million and why, you know, championship clubs didn't even get involved before that?
Well, at the time that Leicester signed him, Luton had just been promoted from League One, so I guess a League One player is probably that's a good fee for a League One player. But you're right, I mean, you look at the way he's playing now, but at the time he hadn't played in the top two divisions, so I suppose it was a decent investment, a decent fee for a player at that level. But still, you know, try and sell him now, you can probably treble that at least.
I want to also touch upon Maddison. Jules, I know something tells me he's the kind of player you really like, because he has the techers. I thought last season, you know, he was extremely inconsistent. You know, you had moments of brilliance and other times, you know, I'm not just talking about his dives and stuff. I mean, people might compare him and Harvey Barnes. Barnes, to me, seems on a much more steady trajectory, but Maddison has the much, much bigger upside. Would you agree?
Yeah, completely. And Barnes is younger, and I think Barnes has a great future. But Maddison, and people love the interview that he gave on Sky Sports after the game, but this is the interview that he's been given all season. This is not new. This was good maybe because of...
Okay, this is the interview where he basically said, oh, well, you know, we'll let the other teams in the Big Six worry about the title. We'll just get on with our business.
Yeah, but the most important part of the interview is more when he said, like, you know, I realized I was not efficient enough in assists and in goals and on how to work with that. He said, I heard Jamie Carragher one day said, oh, but Maddison, to go to the next level, he has to score more and have bigger numbers. And that was the quite fascinating part, is that he said, okay, I watched back every of my games And then we did the work with Brendan Rodgers and the video analysis guy at Leicester to see where I could improve in my runs, in my finishing, how I could make me have better numbers. And I thought that was great. And I think he has an amazing mentality. I think he's got great talent. It's also funny because I did an interview for UEFA with Tielemans and Pratt, and one of the it was like funny questions, you know, that kind of stuff. And one of the questions was, who do you think during the pandemic, when there was no football, was the most likely in the squad to look at their own YouTube highlights? And they had to write down the right answer, right? And they could not see what the other one was doing, and then we were comparing the answers. And both of them literally wrote the answer straight away, and it was Maddison. And I don't think this is a criticism at all.
No.
And because in fact, if you're as good as him and score those kind of goals, you want to watch them again. However, I think it was maybe as much as like, you know, he likes that side of the game and maybe he likes himself as well, which again I've got no issue with. Right. But doesn't maybe also me. Also about, okay, let's watch it again, but let's see maybe how I can do it differently and how I can do better.
All right, this brings up...
I think just on Maddison, I just think it's worth adding that if and when he does leave Leicester, where he goes will be a big thing, because he needs managing James Maddison. Both Brendan Rodgers and Gareth Southgate have both made the point that he's a challenging player to handle, in a good way in a sense, but he is very confident, he is very sure of himself, and I think at times he does need to be reined in a bit. And I think, you know, just broaden out to the international stage, Southgate doesn't quite trust him. Just as he took a long time to trust Grealish, if he still does, he doesn't quite trust James Maddison. And I think the way he plays, if he picks the wrong club next time, it could be disastrous for his career. I think he has to pick the right club and the right manager. And I think at the moment he has that with Brendan Rodgers, but Brendan does work with him quite a lot in terms of making sure he stays focused and doesn't get too carried away with what happened. So the publicity he's had in the back of the interview will be interesting to see how he handles that, because that is the sort of thing that could be a negative thing for James Maddison if he takes it the wrong way.
How did I surprise me that the man dressed all in black would give us something negative for our celebration?
And that Gareth Southgate doesn't fancy, you know, flair players. Hey, what a surprise.
I do want to raise, before we get to Chelsea, I want to raise a point, just something which has always fascinated me when you made that point about Maddison. In other sports, in so many U.S. sports, for example, in the NFL being the most obvious one, but also the NBA to a point, players do a lot of film study where they look at their individual technique and stuff, and you know they literally spend hours doing this. In football, it's extremely rare. And I've asked people in the past about this, why don't you do it? And they said, well, we use it some situations, blah, blah, blah. It's almost always like a collective thing about, you know, where you could have made a different decision. Should clubs be doing, but he says, but ultimately players aren't trained to sit in front of screens watching themselves back for many hours, and so you lose them pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Is this something that
big time
people could benefit from? Not just Maddison.
I don't understand it, and all the players I know and well and speak to, I said to them all the time, this is what you should be doing, and a lot of them do it. But some don't do it at all. They don't even watch football, full stop. Not their own game, no games at all. Don't care, and they lose very quickly interest when it's a team video analysis session, and when the manager is actually, you know, showing them what to do and how to do things better, they're not interested in that. I don't know, maybe, I don't know if Messi and Cristiano do it. I don't know if the best do it, but there's certainly a lot that I know who do it, but also a lot that I know who don't do it or not interested. I don't understand why you would not want to do it, because you know it's going to make you better. You're going to see it again and you're going to, oh, okay, yeah, of course, but I did this because I thought quickly and then I thought this guy would come, but he didn't come. So next time, I don't know why you would not do it.
I mean, there's the anecdotal evidence of that, you know, we heard the Louis van Gaal story at Man United where he would email his players DVD clips and video clips of their performances, maybe 4 or 5 minute emails, and he had to insert receipts on read receipts on the emails to make sure they were read, but the players were reading them and they're deleting them. They weren't watching these video clips. And I've spoken to data people who say that in the last 10, 15 years, there's been a massive change in the way that players digest that kind of information. So, you know, back in the day when players would be bored, rigid, watching a 90-minute playback of a game, that hasn't happened anymore. But they say nowadays, you have to condense it down to like 2 minutes on a clip for a play. Otherwise, 2 or 3 minutes, and their attention just goes. They're not interested in sitting down, the majority, and just watching the, you know, the breakdown of the game or the movements they have to do or the tactical information. They really want it by itself.
A lot of clubs offer it to the players. Man City do it, Liverpool do it. You can have your own clips, like you can have the clips of the players that you're most likely to face in the next game. And some players don't want, they don't even want to watch the guy who they're going to face next, to see how he plays, how he attacks, how he defends, to help them out. I don't understand why you would say no to that kind of help.
I think it varies tremendously from player to player with your aptitude for doing, you know, what ultimately are repetitive tasks. And but it ties into, I think, also a lot of this belief that your individual technique isn't going to improve beyond a certain age and whatnot. Because even something like that, you look at golfers, right? They'll have to spend hours in 3D analyzing a golf swing. If you're striking a ball, I mean, are you striking it differently? Could you have done it differently? Is there an adjustment you could have made? And there's still this idea like, oh, you don't want to give them too much to think about. Anyway, a word on Chelsea. Obviously, we've covered them a lot. I suspect we will be discussing this further. Consensus, as I mentioned earlier, seems to be that Lampard is going to stick around. So we'll see which way that goes. But are you surprised with about the names that they're being linked with, in particular this massive insistence on Thomas Tuchel? I don't understand this. I don't get this.
Why don't you Thomas understand?
Because the guy was fired, right, 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah.
From a different league. And I would argue at Paris Saint-Germain, playing a football that worked for Paris Saint-Germain to some degree, although not that well because he got fired in the end. But that isn't the football that made him great. It was completely different from the way he played previously at Mainz at the beginning of Borussia Dortmund. And now all of a sudden, he's being linked continuously. I wonder if this might have to do with the fact that in the last couple months, he's decided to get representation from a certain agent who talks to the media all the time.
Yeah, I think Pini Zahavi, not just talking to the media or his people, but also having very good links with Chelsea, it's only a big factor of why Thomas Tuchel is linked so heavily with the club. I think he's a really good coach. And I think he didn't work for many reasons in Paris, or half worked. And it's not a reason why he could not work at Chelsea with this squad.
But you wonder about what... I mean, surely if they were looking at Tuchel, it's not just my understanding, it might be something for the summer. It's not going to be something where after 6 weeks he says, you know, he says, oh, let me get straight back into management.
No, and I think he would like it more to come in the summer than come now. So maybe you bring an interim coach between now and the summer, and then Tuchel or someone else who will have the whole preseason, the transfer window, everything he wants to build this squad and get them ready and everything. But that's fine. That it's no problem. It could be a good plan. But who do you get as an interim coach? Don't give me like the Shevchenkos and Avram Grant and those people, because Lampard.
Here's the thing, right? And I have, and I wrote a piece about this, right? Chelsea have this, because we love our narratives, right? Chelsea have this idea that Abramovich is this mad, trigger-happy oligarch who just keeps firing and firing and firing, right? And it's true that he's had 13 managerial changes since he took over in 2003, which is as many, actually it's more than Arsenal, United, and Liverpool combined. However, Chelsea actually in recent years very rarely, even when they know they're going to make a change, very rarely change managers during a season. Yeah. You know, they did it with Di Matteo, who was himself an interim coach. Obviously, Rafa Benitez was an interim coach. When they sacked Mourinho, they really had no choice. They were 1 point above the relegation zone. Even in cases with Sarri, where we knew he was going to go, and he might have been sacked, they still stuck around until the end of the season.
And then they won the Europa League.
They won the Europa League, and incidentally, he left to join Juventus. So technically, you
but
know,
Conte,
he wasn't,
Conte
he wasn't
was
sacked.
Similar.
Conte, the same thing. Yeah. The wheels were coming off, and yet they stuck with it.
Yeah.
So this sort of, you know, cliche of Abramovich, I think, is badly misplaced. But I want to chuck something out there on this about, we know all the mitigating factors for Frank, right? With all the changes and the pandemic and the spending and the pressure and all this stuff. There's a school of thought that if they had spent, I want to get you on this because I think I've already asked Jules this because I'm getting old, I forget, but you can weigh into it if I haven't. There's a school of thought that says very simply and plainly, and I think this is one of the reasons why he's staying in his job, that going into the season, we said this on this very show, they're understrength in terms of specialist defensive midfielders.
Yeah.
They have one guy, N'Golo Kante, who actually doesn't even play in that holding midfield role. He normally goes around and hunts, and they have to put Jorginho there or Kovacic or whatever. That's something where they need to bring in a player in that position. And obviously, all summer long, they were linked with Declan Rice. Declan Rice, who of course, Chelsea youth team guy. Eventually, Declan Rice never arrived, despite Harry Redknapp's best efforts on television on deadline day. And you can say the official reason was that, oh, West Ham want 80 million, West Ham want 80 million. Very simple question. If Lampard, if we could see this, that the squad was on balance and they were better off with Declan Rice, why didn't, could Lampard have said, hey, how about instead of spending the money on Kai Havertz, who I don't necessarily need, what if we spend that money on Declan Rice? I mean, would it be a different Chelsea right now? Would it be a better Chelsea? Would it be a more rational Chelsea if they go? I know we're talking with the benefit of hindsight. And is there a scenario where maybe that is what Frank Lampard wanted?
Well, it couldn't be a worse Chelsea, could it? Because if you take Kai Havertz out of that squad, does it diminish in any respect right now? No. So if Declan Rice had come in, it would have made them better. But you know, the questions are, as always with Chelsea, how much does the manager have an input into who they sign and who they let go? And whether Lampard had the ability to change the recruitment enough, I don't know. I don't think he has that power. I don't think any Chelsea manager really had that power, even Mourinho at his peak. So Lampard has to work with what he has, and that for me is what it gets back to.
But Lampard, no doubt, I mean, we know this, Lampard would have lobbied for Declan Rice, right? Then they decided to go in a different direction. Maybe they thought that they could sell Barkley and Loftus-Cheek for a lot of money, and then they could raise, and maybe Jorginho too, maybe they could raise the money for Rice that way. Maybe they could get Rice and Havertz at some point. But the point is, if Lampard was lobbying for Rice, right, put that out there, and there were other people saying, no, forget Rice, Havertz is more important, Abramovich can see what happened, right? Abramovich knows that they chose Havertz over Rice, and that the squad
really,
is also...
Did they really, though?
Well, he knows he didn't sign Rice.
Yeah,
he knows that,
okay. But maybe Rice was a case of like, okay, let's do a Van Dijk and wait until January, for example, or even wait until next summer.
Well, because you'll suddenly be cheaper in January?
No, well, it'd be closer to the end of his contract if you wait for a year and maybe be cheaper. And maybe Havertz was now or never. And maybe you thought, okay, we can wait a little bit for Rice. He's desperate to come. He will come in 6 months or in 12 months.
It's always quite enticing to an owner or a CEO to sign the next big thing as well, isn't it? The next exciting attacking talent. It's always easy to be persuaded that, listen, if you sign this guy, he's going to be the most creative player you're going to have for the next 5 or 6 years.
I don't doubt any of that. The point is, some people within Chelsea did the persuading, whether it was Peter Cech, whether it was Scott McLaughlin, whether it was somebody else, right?
That's true.
Somebody eventually lobbied for Havertz ahead of Rice, even in terms of priorities. I guess maybe they could have signed both. I don't know, right? Yeah. Somebody did that. And I think that is in Abramovich's mind. Abramovich knows who wanted to do what. And I think that is part of the reason why there will continue to be faith in Lampard unless things really deteriorate or blow up.
Well, they've got three home games, three really winnable home games coming up this next week, haven't they? They've got Luton in the Cup, Burnley and Wolves. And I think if they don't win any, if any of those games don't end with a victory, then I think Lampard's got a problem. And I think, yes, I think that the desire is to stay with him until the end of the season if possible, but you can't keep losing games or dropping points. And they've got Tottenham away in 2 weeks' time. So can you imagine the going to Tottenham, Mourinho, losing again, being mid-table? I don't think they can sustain Frank until the end of the season if this carries on.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, Manchester City. They go top of the Premier League for about 2 hours. but it's a big win for them against Aston Villa. They won 2-0. I think we need to talk about this a little bit, them and Villa, because I thought this is a really open game. I mean, this finished 2-0.
That was great.
Could have finished with many more goals on both sides. Is this a sign of both teams being good when there's this many chances, or is it a sign of something else?
No, I thought he was a sense that both teams were good. I think it looked to me that City were tired, and obviously Aston Villa didn't play in midweek, so that was their sort of first game of the week, and they looked fresher, and that's why maybe they were more threatening at some point when it looked like they were going to score, and it looked like the game was very much in the balance.
And they didn't sit Villa too. Like,
no,
when they had the ball, they kept the ball. I mean, that's a credit to Dean Smith.
They did sit a bit, and they had to anyway.
No, I know, but it wasn't bus parking, is what I'm driving at.
Yeah, no, but you're right. I think, I mean, Bertrand Traoré, if you, for the people who don't really watch Ligue 1, if you'd seen him at the start of the season or even the second half of last season, and you see him now or you see him last night, you just cannot believe he's the same player. The confidence is back, the swag is back. I mean, he's always been very, very good technically, but he'd lost all sort of momentum and confidence back home in France, and now he's different. Grealish, even if he's, you know, I don't think that was his best game, it was always going to be difficult and tricky, but it was good from
a
Villa
point of
view.
The move he put on João Cancelo,
yeah,
when he leaves him for dead. I thought you'd like that.
But City are the real deal. No, they're back.
Are Villa the real deal in terms of where they can finish, though? Because look, in the end, it finished 2-0. The second goal was a garbage time penalty, whatever. And he then complained about it. I don't know how you can complain. Your arm is out here.
I know.
You
know, it's crazy.
It's 2021 even. These are the rules. But the first one, and like, we're not showing we can't show the pictures, so it's difficult to understand. But you've probably read about it. Rodri returns from a position where he's offside, not interfering with play. Ball's hit over the top to Mings. Mings chests it, and then
Mings
Rodri
plays it. That's enough. There's no controversy.
Okay, there's no, because here in England, everybody was like, "Oh my God, there's something wrong with it." And in the end, the most we got was the laws of the game are broken. FIFA ruining football again because of. But there's no controversy.
But that rule has been there forever, right? It's not a new rule. It's a rule that if you play the ball,
if you start a new phase of play,
exactly, deliberately, then everybody's back in play. I don't care where Rodri was. And by the way, Tyrone Mings knew that Rodri was there
because he sees him.
Or if he doesn't know, then it's even worse.
No, he knows he's there. You watch the pictures, you see him. He's looking at him.
So what do you expect?
Him.
So then Mings doesn't know the rule, or Mings
a lot of people didn't know the rule. A lot of people, including Dean Smith, who was sent off as a result.
Right, okay. Well, if I don't understand how people who've been in the game for so long don't know the rule where if you play the game, if you play the ball deliberately, then you're back to phase one and everybody can play. And if that's the case anyway, Mings could kick the ball far if he's not sure. Don't take the risk of, like, you know, he's offside, he's not offside. Yeah, and by the way, once Rodri gets the ball back, it's not like if he was one-on-one with Martinez, right? There's still enough defenders
coming
back.
They still had a bit
back.
Of work to do.
Yeah, but, exactly. Okay. And it's still a great goal. So,
other than this negativity, are City your favourites to win the title?
They have to be. I mean, I said Liverpool were going to win it, and I have to keep my prediction alive, I guess. But City looks so strong everywhere, and that's without Aguero. That's with Kevin De Bruyne clearly not being fully fit
and
coming
off
after 55 minutes. And you just think, right, okay, you know, when Aguero will be back, if he's back, when you've got everybody together, it's just, they would be hard to stop. But
I'm gonna go with City as well. This is a deeper team. They can beat you in different ways. Certain players, I think, can still improve.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what. I think this is gonna go down to the wire because I'm not convinced what condition Aguero will be in.
Yeah. And you know what I'm really happy for is for Bernardo Silva or Bernardo Gundogan or, you know, Ilkay Silva.
You're not being very nice now.
No, I'm only joking.
Props to whoever caught that reference.
Yeah, Adam Summerton. I love you. You know that, but. It's his first goal in the Premier League this season. It's incredible. Someone who's been so good for them, not so much last season, already he struggled a bit, but certainly the season before that.
Yeah.
And you wonder, what do you think happened? How can he's been so good? Maybe he played so much prior to that season that he needed a break and to reevaluate himself. I don't know anything, but how can you be so good and suddenly so anonymous and then back good again?
He had a tough 18 months, you know, on the pitch. And I think there was a moment when, in Pep Guardiola's mind, because look, when Bernardo Silva plays wide, he doesn't have the flat out pace, or even necessarily, I think, the stamina to go up and down, right? So I think he was seeing his future as, okay, David, one Silva leaves,
yeah,
he's the future there, right? And it didn't work out, or it hasn't necessarily been working out. It may happen in the future. David Silva, of course, also started wide and then became a player more central. But I think this is something that Pep does very, very well. When his players have ups and downs, I mean, Raheem Sterling also not having a good season, as we pointed out, you know, he brings them back. He stays loyal to them and does make a difference. Obviously, John Stones being, exhibit 1A of this. But there's no question to me he can be a value added down the stretch. It's still remarkable when you think about that. I think, I don't know if it's still the case, but Phil Foden was your top scorer with 8 goals, which is, wow, you know. You would
and
think
that's
with
when
all the...
we go back to Aguero and the Aguero injury conundrum, whatever you want to call it. As like, should you have bought someone last summer, considering you knew that Aguero had only 1 year left on his contract, considering you knew how injury prone he'd been and he was going to be this season. And maybe you never thought it would be that bad that we would see him, did he play like 5 little pieces of games through the season?
It's interesting. Hindsight is always 20/20, right? Manchester City were the second biggest net spenders in the Premier League last summer after Chelsea, right?
Yeah.
And they spent their money on Ruben Dias, who's obviously been fantastic, and Nathan Ake. I think to some degree, you know, that was the conundrum. Do I bring in another potential center forward? And they could argue that they did that in Ferran Torres, of course. Is his future at center forward? I don't know. That's one of the things about Pep Guardiola is that I don't think he sees positions on the pitch the way other people do. You know, I think he sees.
But then he looked at the numbers and said, okay, who's going to score me 20 goals this season?
Well, I'll tell you what, if this is going to be your benchmark, he went into the season, potentially, right? Potential 20 goal scorers, people have done it before or have come close. Aguero, Raheem Sterling.
Gabriel Jesus,
De Bruyne. I'm sure he scored 20 goals at some point or came close. And Ferran Torres is also a double-figure goal scorer, potentially. So he's looked at this group of players and said, all right, you know, goals aren't going to be an issue. I want to talk a little bit about Villa because for people, I didn't even know this, I've lived here for a while, but people in Birmingham sometimes refer to themselves as the second city, right?
Yeah.
Aston Villa are a club that have won the European Cup.
Yes, they did.
They're a club, when we think of the big six the way they are now, you know, we often think of, well, potentially Leeds could join them. Aston Villa historically have that gravitas. They've had a whole bunch of false starts and whatever. They've had ups and downs. Now, you know, one of their owners, Nasser Sawiris, is the richest or second richest man in Africa right now, incidentally.
I mean, they were due a good owner, to be fair.
They're due good owners. I look at this and what they've put together, I feel like they've done it without going out and chucking a lot of money around. I'm surprised how well Dean Smith has done. I heard great things of him at Brentford and you know, even before that, I think he was at Walsall. But you know, you look at him and you see he looks like a nice guy. He looks like you're mate at the pub, right? He doesn't scream out, you know, some sort of, he doesn't look like a guru, put it that way.
Yeah, no.
But what he's done is, the work that they've done, I think, is remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, especially he took over when they were really in bad position in the Championship. And I think what I like the most, and it doesn't always work, of course, but the fact that this is his club. This is his boyhood club. He supported them as a kid. And now you've got a captain in Jack Grealish and a manager in Dean Smith who know exactly what the club means to the community, to the fans. And I think you understand far better the job that you have to do when it's the case, in some situations, than if it's just someone who arrived from France or wherever, a manager who doesn't know much about it.
And you also have individual players who have progressed. And obviously, I mean, Grealish obviously gets the headlines, but, you know, McGinn looks like a real footballer now, like a top six footballer. Yeah. Tyrone Mings as well got back. You know, he was a guy who was very promising when he was very young, lost his way for different reasons. He looks like the real deal.
And they've got a very good academy, which they always had. However, they still spend a lot of money. They spend a lot of money when they came back up the first time before going back down.
On Wesley.
Well, yeah, but overall.
Didn't quite work out.
But Traoré is a £20 million player. So is Watkins. So is Martinez. you know, so is Sanson.
It adds up.
So is Sanson, who's going to come from Marseille any day soon now. So, you know, they've got that budget. And but good on you. You know, this is a very rich league. You get money, spend it. I'm all for it, especially when it works out, because Martinez, had he been there last season, they would not have finished, what, they were 17th.
Yeah.
And Arsenal would not have finished where they did either, by the way. So, you know, if you're intelligent in your recruitment, even if you have a bit of money to spend, it's good. But yeah, they have spent a bit of money.
I think the ceiling for this club is pretty high, just given the size of their fan base and their catchment area.
Yeah.
If they can do it, if they can maybe follow, whether you want to call it the Leicester model or whatever, you can get to the point where then, you know, you can be in that group of clubs knocking on the Big Six and maybe even becoming a part of it.
Yeah.
And by the way, one last thing. When I say about Big Six, I'm not being elitist here. I'm just dealing with facts and numbers, right? Number six in the Big Six has roughly twice the wage bill as number seven. That is the divide, right? That's where you want to turn this, the Big Six into a Big Eight or whatever. Great. But I'm talking about resources. That's all I'm talking about.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Enough City. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Real Madrid crush out of the Copa del Rey against Alcoyano, a team from the Spanish fourth tier, which means that because the third flight is regionalized, there are some 150 places between them in the pyramid. Jules, it's going to be hard even for us to keep defending Zizou if this continues.
Yeah, and you know what strikes me the most and hurts the most is that Zidane after the game says, oh, it doesn't really matter. You know, it's not the worst defeat I had. It's not that bad.
What do you expect him to say?
This is Real Madrid we're talking about. He did the same after the Super Cup semi-final, where he goes, oh, it's okay to be knocked out in the Super Cup semi-final. This is Real Madrid. You should win every game. You should win every competition. You can't tell me it's okay not to do well in Copa, to lose against a third division team. It's okay. No, it's not okay. It's not okay when you were 1-0 up and you messed up your changes once again and you let your team being beaten by a team that, again, third division, down to 10 men, because your lack of reactivity, as often this season, it's on him. And then you come out and say, like, oh, it's okay, it's nothing, don't worry. No, it's worrying. We do worry.
That is one of the two big concerns, right? Because, like, this was a Real Madrid B team that went out there. Let's be very, very clear on that.
Yeah, no,
it was,
course.
other than Casemiro and I guess Vinicius, most of these guys, well, Valverde coming back. But even Casemiro is really the only proper 100% starter who started
the game. And
Lucas
Vazquez,
right?
Who started in the last 19th game or something.
But what strikes me here, so you can look at that and say, all right, well, Lunin, that other guy, kid who played center back, who nobody had ever heard of. But still, you still could have reacted once you saw the game.
100%.
You made changes. He sent on Benzema. He sent on Hazard.
Kroos.
He sent on Asensio, Toni Kroos. That is worrying. And the other thing that's worrying is, this is your B team, fine. But you can go to these guys and you can say, guys, this is Alcoyano. Execute properly. Be brave. Be smart. Prove me wrong. Show me that you deserve to be play 100%. In the first team. That's the
motivation?
Message.
Where is the motivation?
Where was it?
I don't know. And by the way, Marcelo started at left back.
I knew it.
And as you know, when Marcelo starts, Real Madrid end up losing. However, I just think this is super worrying. That's all. Sticking with Real Madrid, Florentino Perez visited Juventus last week to hang out with Cristiano Ronaldo and Andrea Agnelli. Gab, any idea why you went there?
This is one of those mysteries. It's a little bit like in Copenhagen when Heisenberg visits Niels Bohr and changes the course of human history.
But now it's a pandemic, you know, and you just fly out all the way to Turin.
I don't know. Obviously, it's being spun as like, oh, Florentino and Cristiano are friends again. I'm going to assume that this is something to do with the Champions League contract, which is coming up. With the clubs trying to get a better deal, Florentino Perez waving, or some people might say pretending to wave, the breakaway Super League flag, high-level meetings. Obviously, Florentino shows up, and you're Agnelli, what are you going to do? Say, no, I'm busy. Go away, Flore. No, not going to happen. But this just shows you that there is intrigue among the clubs, and there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. Juventus beat Napoli 2-0 to win the Italian Super Cup. Jules, did you see progress from Andrea Pirlo?
I didn't. I'm sorry, Gab. When your goalkeeper, and again, we come back to this, when your goalkeeper is your best player on the pitch.
Huge save at the end of the game from Chesney.
And on Chucky Lozano header when it was 0-0, Chesney coming super big and saving Juve again. There can't be any progress. Of course, yeah, you won. One goal is in garbage time, as you like to say, at the end, Morata.
And Napoli missed a penalty.
The other one is Cristiano on a deflected corner header. I'm sorry, I didn't see anything in the game. I didn't see any sort of, again, identity, patterns of play. The midfield was slow. It was, and you had McKinnon. You had a bit more of energy there. Okay, I give him that. But
yeah, they had a bit more energy. I think that's the best we can say. And look, obviously, Kulusevski and Cristiano Ronaldo is not a front two.
No.
But still.
Still. But Cristiano, as we said, scored, and this is 760th goal of his career. I mean, there's record and record, and, you know, Josep Bican scored a lot of goals in his time, a long time ago in the Czech League or whatever. But 760 is amazing.
This is why these records, these records are stupid. They're completely irrelevant. I mean, look, I have the max respect for people in the past. Josep Bican,
yeah.
Some people say he scored 805 goals. Some people say he scored 805 plus. Some people say he scored 759, which is why Cristiano has now passed him. Some people have Romario at 772, so he's not quite there yet. Some people count Cristiano Ronaldo's goals with the under 21. So people don't. Like, this is all irrelevant, right? There's no... Bican was, again, with all due respect, yep, a guy who played in the Czech League when he was very good, admittedly, but it was during the war when half these people were literally at war, scored a bazillion goals. We're not even sure how many goals he played. We're not sure about the record keeping. This is not what makes Cristiano Ronaldo great.
No.
Right? What makes him great is the fact that he has scored an enormous amount of goals. By the way, this is if you add his international goals with his club goals. I think these are stupid statistics. I'm not averse to numbers, but these are just dumb numbers. Don't bring them up again.
Just
Cristiano Ronaldo
Cristiano.
Doesn't need this. You know what's impressive about Cristiano Ronaldo?
What?
I don't have the exact stat, but it's something like a bazillion. Because I say bazillion because it was many. It's like 18 or 20 seasons scoring more than 40 goals over the course. You know, stuff like that is amazing.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Not this.
Yeah.
Not this.
Exactly.
Leicester were top, then City, but now it's Manchester United who are top after beating Fulham 2-1, thanks to goals from your boys, Edinson Cavani and Paul Pogba. Jules, if he keeps this up, might Pogba end up changing his mind and signing a new deal?
Hang on, I thought Paul Pogba was not good enough. I thought Paul Pogba was overrated.
He doesn't track back.
I thought Paul Pogba, you should get rid.
He's dabbing.
Paul Pogba is not.
He's disrespectful. Mino's the devil.
Exactly. I mean, Paul Pogba is an incredible talent that right now is carrying Manchester United more than Bruno Fernandes. Okay? And I think that if you're clever, if you're Manchester United, you try everything you can do to convince him to stay. Whether you give him a new deal, or it could be just a one-year deal, and you say, okay, give us another year at this kind of level, and then we can win the league for sure, and we can achieve great things.
I don't think there's any way he signs a one-year deal, but equally, I don't think that the last chapter on Paul Pogba has been written yet.
That's for sure. Arsenal won against Newcastle on Monday night. It was Gab to break into the Premier League top 10. Hey, the kids, Gab. Emile Smith Rowe and Bukayo Saka again, who got it done.
Yeah, amazing. When, you know, these guys are on your doorstep, you see them every day, and then you go and you sign Willian. Okay, I got to stop bringing this up. No, it's impressive. This guy Smith Rowe looks like he's getting a new contract.
Yeah.
Contract will be about, I think, 1/8 of what Willian earns.
Here we go.
Look, Arteta, whatever else you think about him, Arteta obviously is confident in his decisions. Mm-hmm. Nice to see Cedric Suarez as well. I think it was
doing
his
well.
First start in the Premier League.
Yeah, doing well. And by the way, remember who gave Saka and Smith Rowe their debut for Arsenal? Unai Emery.
Oh, the forgotten man.
Exactly.
Borussia Dortmund not only lose to Peter Boss's Bayer Leverkusen, they get outsmarted by him too. Jules, we can dwell on the fact that they're now 10 points back and won't win the title. Or we can celebrate Florian Wirtz.
Both. Yeah, both. Because Wirtz, as we said, as we've been saying all season, 17, is an incredible talent. He scored the winner. He took that goal so well as well when it was 1-1. And for Dortmund, ET is just an interim manager. He's a good guy. He just can't do this job. You can't compete with Peter Bosz when you're just an interim guy who doesn't have much of an idea.
They were
Marco
let
Rose
down.
Has to come very, very quickly.
Yeah, let down by their defending again.
Yeah, as well. It was all about the penalties between Bayern and Augsburg on Wednesday evening. Robert Lewandowski scored first, and then Alfen Bogason misses right at the end, and Bayern win 1-0. Gab, they were fortunate, right?
Yeah, I think they were fortunate. Look, I praised them at the weekend when I thought they played well, even though they were a bit lucky with the crossbar. This was a poor performance, poor night from Pavard. He's got to sort this out.
Terrible.
He's got to sort this out because the gap is 4 points, but you know Leipzig are still there.
Yeah.
FIFA have dismissed Kieran Trippier's appeal over his 10-week ban. He'd been found guilty of advising a friend to bet on him joining Atletico as a free agent. Jules, your thoughts? Could this derail Atletico's title run?
I think he can, Gab. I think he can because they don't really have a proper replacement for him. I mean, they've got Vasako, who, you know, we know.
Come on, man.
Yeah, exactly.
World Cup finalist.
And I think that's a worry. That's a worry, but it was expected.
I'm not so negative on Atletico, man. I believe
they're too far
in
ahead
Cholo
anyway,
and Cholismo. Yeah.
Carlos Rummenigge reveals that UEFA are considering changing their plans for the Euros this summer and holding them in just one country instead of the 12 cities. Gab, that makes sense.
Yeah, so my understanding is that they're going to try their darndest to have it to stick with the original plan.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's pitfalls. Other things have been booked, local authorities, local situations. I think, so you need a plan B. They don't know exactly what the one country is. Could be Germany. Some people have suggested England. Others have suggested Portugal. I don't care where it is. I just want it to be safe. And it makes sense that they have a plan B. If you have to put all these people in a bubble, put them all in a bubble. There's talk that maybe they'll allow 30% of fans in. That's fine. You know, it would be great if the fans could be there. But
when would we know, do you think?
I think in March we'll have a better idea. But I tell you what, if this is to go down to the wire until May, I'm fine with it. I just want them to make sure that they can play the Euros, that we can have our Euro 2020 in 2021, and that it be done safely, as safe as possible.
Yeah.
Milan defeat Cagliari 2-0 on Monday to stay top in Serie A. Of course, it was your boy Zlatan Ibrahimovic who scored both goals. Jules, they're getting him some help. Mandzukic and Mate are already there, and they hope to pick up Tomori and Junior Firpo too.
Yeah, and I think they're doing well. They need bodies. We saw with the injuries they had, all the COVID cases and all of that, the bigger squad you have, the more chances you will have to win the title this season. So let's hope that all those players adapt quickly, that they can fit in the rotation and can help the team to... Nice.
They're all cheap and
winning.
Cheerful.
Exactly. Let's go for now. Horrible few days for Roma. They lose to Lazio in the derby first, then Spezia knocked them out of the Coppa d'Italia, but they would have had to forfeit anyway since they somehow made 6 substitutions when the limit is 5 in that game. Gab, I mean, wow.
So I should explain this. So the rules worldwide are you can make 5 substitutions, but you only have 3 opportunities to substitute. So you have to do, you can't basically stop the game 5 times. You can only stop it 3 times. What happened on this occasion was they went to extra time, so they assumed that they had another opportunity to do that. And in some tournaments, and then what the rules say is that it's up to the tournament organizer. So, for example, in the Spanish Super Cup, I know this passed you by, Athletic Bilbao made 6 substitutions.
Yeah.
They brought in 6 subs. However, these are not the rules of the Coppa Italia. And there is a guy who I think this is the last we'll see of him, whose specific job is to make sure that they follow the rules. He's the guy who walks over with a sheet to the fourth official, right?
Yeah.
I don't want to name him, shame him. He's had a tough time.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows who he is. I don't think he's going to be going out much in Rome. But the amazing thing is, this is the second time this season that they've made a stupid administrative error. Because you'll recall earlier, they played Diawara and they registered him in the wrong list and they got docked points right. So, for me, this is just extraordinary, extraordinary. And if you're one of the Friedkins, your head's got to be exploding right now. Julian Nagelsmann follows your advice and releases the only sore loss in captivity against Union Berlin. Jules, it can't be a coincidence that they went on to win and kept pace with Bayern.
You're right. And also, he listened to us when we said to Nagelsmann, listen, Forsberg needs a rest. He needs to be on the bench a bit. Rest him. Starts on the bench, come on, scores the winner.
Yeah.
You see?
Rested Forsberg is a happy Forsberg.
Exactly. Real Madrid are reportedly going to loan out Martin Odegaard. Does this make sense to you, Gab, first of all? And does it make sense that he's linked to Arsenal?
It makes zero sense to me that he's linked to Arsenal, frankly. And if I were Arsenal, I wouldn't. Unless you can get him with a buyback clause, I don't think it makes it makes any sense to bring in Odegaard if you're Arsenal. You got a good thing going. You have a lot of bodies in that situation. You know, is he better than Dani Ceballos? Maybe. But, you know, Dani Ceballos even playing now. You got Emile Smith Rowe. So it would make more sense maybe if he went back to Real Sociedad. It would make even more sense if he just stayed and Zidane played him once in a while.
So he deserves a chance at Real Madrid. He deserves time, right, to work with him, to make sure that he fits in that team.
I mean, Real Madrid only have so many central midfielders, right? You've got the three dudes who seemingly always start.
Yeah.
You have Valverde. You got Odegaard. What, Odegaard can't get on the pitch?
Crazy.
Sticking with Arsenal, Sokratis Papastathopoulos, the only reason I mention his full name is I'm so proud of the fact I can spell it. He's been released from his contract and is now a free agent. Jules, I'm probably in the minority here. It's probably the Greek-Italian love affair, but I think when he's fit, he's actually pretty good. He's not going to cost you anything. He's got Premier League experience.
He's a leader. He's got a great mentality. Not always the greatest on the ball, of course, but you know, if you ask him to do what he can do, then I think he'll be a good buy. Well, you know, on a free, good get for anyone.
Would it be out of this world if, say, I can think of a club that play in red in the north of England that don't have any money to spend on defenders right now? What if Klopp? It says that, like, hello, Sokratis. And they can know that he probably speak to him in German, of course.
Yeah, they were together in Germany at the same time.
Exactly. So, what if he brings him back? Hey, how about you come back here for 6 months? You're not cup tied anywhere. You're obviously not going to play next year, right?
You heard it here first. Schalke bring back 37-year-old Klaas-Jan Huntelaar to try to avoid relegation. But Gab, is the kid young enough to be his son who can't stop scoring? American Matthew Hopper finds the net for the third game in a row. I mean, they still lost, but at least he's scoring.
I saw a stat from our old colleague at ESPN, Paul Carr, that whereby he'd scored more in 2021 than anybody. It's 5 goals, obviously.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a great story. Huntelaar coming back. The Hunter
Love
coming.
It.
He keeps going back everywhere. Remember, he went back to Ajax. I was going to go back to Schalke. As long as he doesn't go back to Milan, you know.
Yeah, you're happy with that.
Can you imagine Huntelaar, Mandzukic, and Ibra together?
God. It's back like a retirement home.
But the thing is, the problem with this team is they're still really bad. 7 points at the bottom of the table. Yeah. By the way, a little addendum before we move on. Earlier, we told you, and this is just evidence that we go and we record this in real time because there is breaking news. I'm going to mention Florentino Perez visiting Andrea Agnelli, and we don't know what they talked about. And I made my very intellectual Niels Bohr, Werner Heisenberg analogy. FIFA are taking this pretty seriously. There's a joint statement that's come out just a few minutes ago as we record this from FIFA and signed by all 6 confederations, which says that any player playing in an unsanctioned European Super League will be banned from playing in World Cups, international football. We'll basically have a worldwide FIFA ban. So that kind of
so what, you would have a World Cup without Messi, Ronaldo, Mbappe.
I mean,
it's to the detriment of the World Cup either. If you have a Super League and all the big stars play in the Super League and they can't play in the World Cup, who would want to watch a World Cup without all the
big
stars?
This is if it's a breakaway, unsanctioned Super League. In fact, technically, they won't be able to play in their domestic championships either, right? Because if FIFA gives you a worldwide ban,
you can't play
in your domestic championships either. And on top of that, since FIFA run the transfer system, they can make life very, very difficult in terms of transfers as well.
Love that.
So it shows you that they're taking Florentino's trip to Turin very seriously. Phil Neville has been confirmed as manager of David Beckham's Inter Miami. Jules, I'm sure the executive search and interview process was thorough and wide-ranging.
Of course, me too. I mean, I don't want to believe that In 2021, you can just pick a manager because he's your friend or because you've played with him before. I want to believe, and I might be wrong, and I want to see, and he might do well there or not, but I want to believe that someone hires a manager in a high competitive league. This is not a Sunday morning pub team, because you really believe he can bring your team to the next level, okay?
Yeah, the optics here really aren't good. And as far as... And even as far as his resume is concerned, right? I mean, he coached the England women's national team at the World Cup. Again, I'm not an expert on women's football. Some people say that he screwed things up more than he helped. Others say whatever. But the point is, coaching a national team is completely different.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not talking men and women. I'm talking a national team versus day to day. I hope that they went through the optics of this aren't very good.
No, I know. Dejan Lovren has revealed that Jurgen Klopp sent him a text message telling him how he missed him. And Lovren says that they miss him more than he misses them. Not very kind heading into their game against Burnley on Thursday night, Gab.
I don't know if something was lost in translation. I think it's a very weird thing to say, Liverpool missed me more than I missed them.
Dejan Lovren loves himself to start with, right?
As the name implies, Lovren. But still, why would you share this? Like, you don't come by. Again, I'm sure he didn't mean it. Good luck to him. But obviously, huge game for Liverpool. Yeah. Brad just found that amusing. Right, that's all we've got time for today. Jules, how about we come back on Monday?
Monday, Gab.
Big Liverpool United game again. Yeah. Until that point, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.